It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show. Happy Tuesday and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. We like to serve Oregon, Washington, and Idaho over this network and provide honestly provocative talk Monday through Friday on a daily basis. And I'm glad to have you with me. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. The search goes on for that young lady from Florida, well, for her killer. Because it may be that Brian Laundrie is still alive. We're going to get to the latest on that. Her body was found and identified through an autopsy. We're going to be talking about the gerrymandering and the gerrymandering done by Democrats in Salem in this case. I have no doubt that Democrats in Olympia would like to do the same thing. But our Twitter poll today, and we're going to get into this in detail a bit later on this hour, and my commentary as well, about the fact that the Democrats have now reneged on a deal in which they promised that they would take Republicans and their point of view into account. Now, we're not just talking about Republican lawmakers. We're talking about the literally millions of people who are represented by Republican lawmakers. And what did the Democrats do? Well, I guess you can trust Democrat promises about as much as you can trust promises from Joe Biden. They simply said, we're not going to do the deal after all. We're going to throw it right out the window. We don't care. We're not going to hold to our word. That actually doesn't surprise people who know about dealing with Democrats. But our question today, should Republican lawmakers now walk out of the legislature to stop the gerrymandering of congressional seats? You realize the political landscape of the Pacific Northwest is being written as the decisions are made about where those congressional seats will sit. And when they do what the Democrats are always want to do, and that is say, why don't we make every part of every congressional district, as much as we can get away with, connect to Portland or Seattle? You are gerrymandering. In some cases, you won't believe the kind of districts that they have drawn that literally go out more than 100 miles in length because they want to connect one city to another city. It almost defies belief just how much the Democrats are willing to cheat. So if they're going to cheat that way, if they're going to renege on the deal to cooperate with the other party, should the Republicans simply say, fine, then you're not going to have a quorum. We are walking out. I would say yes to that question. You can find the Twitter poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com on our website. It's always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. We're going to talk about the isolation and quarantine unit that is in central Washington. And a lot of you have been asking, Lars, what is this all about? I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it, although the state has been playing its cards very close to its vest. Did you know that they bought a hotel in central Washington? Not a big one, about 40 units, and they're calling it a special COVID isolation and quarantine unit. And that has a lot of people asking questions. What the heck is that all about? Who is it that's going to be isolated and quarantined? And why are they advertising jobs to join the strike force that's going to be part of that isolation and quarantine hospital? I'll give you everything I know a bit later in the show. But I want to start with unemployment. Because, as you know, we're actually seeing an economy that even here in the Pacific Northwest, which has been hit hard by some of the most draconian shutdowns, not shutdowns caused by the pandemic, shutdowns caused by out-of-control governors like Kate Brown and Jay Inslee. Remember, Oregon and Washington stand out with having some of the craziest rules anywhere in America. Much of the rest of the country is not behaving this way. Florida certainly isn't. Texas certainly isn't. But in Oregon and Washington, the shutdowns, the mask mandates, the vaccine mandates, to the point where I told you yesterday about Jay Inslee. Jay Inslee has gone hat in hand to the Biden administration saying, I'm in an emergency. I need 1,200 medical personnel. And if the Biden administration was inclined to actually ask, well, what happened to your existing doctors and nurses? Jay Inslee, if he was an honest governor of the state of Washington, would say, well, I have to tell you the truth. I got rid of a lot of those doctors and nurses by insisting that they either take the jab or lose their job. And you've been hearing me tell the stories of those doctors and nurses, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And that's just the start of it. You've got paramedics, you've got firefighters, you've got cops, all of whom are being pushed out of their public service jobs by a jab or no job situation that is imposed by the governors of Oregon and Washington. And it's gotten so bad that Jay Inslee, having created his own crisis, and Kate Brown has done the same by saying, I'm going to push everybody out of those jobs, doctors, nurses, paramedics, cops, firefighters. I'm going to push them out of their jobs, and then I'm going to go begging to the federal government, please give me somebody to replace these people I just got rid of. Now, if that makes sense to anybody, you know on this show, we invite everybody to call. And if you want to be a naysayer, if you want to disagree and tell me there's a sensible reason for Jay Inslee to push doctors and nurses and the like out of their jobs and then turn to the federal government and say, I've got an emergency. I don't have enough doctors and nurses. If any of you naysayers can give me a sensible explanation for that, I'd be glad to take the call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, I want to tell you about something I've been working on since May. And I've given you little bits and pieces as I get the bits and pieces from government. But the question that occurred to me about the middle of May of this year, President Joe Biden, reading off a teleprompter, announced we are no longer going to let people turn down work to stay on unemployment benefits. And I thought, finally, Joe Biden has done something great. I mean, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn now and then, but it was the right thing to do, to say, if you're not willing to take a paying job when it's offered to you, you're off unemployment benefits. But the next question I started asking in late May was, I wonder how many people they're kicking off unemployment benefits for turning down a paying job. And I've told you, Oregon, for example, has about 120,000 people on unemployment. It has 98,000 jobs that are available in the state. So you say, if we have 98,000 jobs and 120,000 people are unemployed, heck, we can solve the problem for at least 100,000 of them. Well, part of that is you got to give people a boot in the butt. Because if people think, well, I can just turn down any paying job I'm offered, and then I get a check for just sitting at home and doing nothing. So I asked the employment division more than a month ago. I said, can you give me the numbers for the number of people you've actually kicked off unemployment benefits for refusing paying work? Because I've had people, and I've cited some of the specific examples of employers who've told me, I've offered jobs to people. I've actually thought I hired people. One of my friends, Butcher Boys, they are a great butcher shop, and yes, they advertise and support the show. But Peter, who runs the place, it's a family-run place, he said, Lars, I hired four people the other day. Three of them didn't even show up after I hired them. One showed up and worked for 2 days and then quit without saying a word. So there's four right there. How many employers do you suppose I could get on this show to describe how many people they have actually said, I will give you the job. I'll give you good pay and good benefits, in some cases even a signing bonus, and then they just don't show up because they'd rather get the free check. So how many people have been kicked off unemployment since May of last year by the Employment Division in Oregon, for example? Out of 150,000 people, almost 160, that they've had unemployment benefits, 341 people. That's all. That's all the people kicked off for turning down a paying job. Coming up, is doing a deal with the Democrats doomed to disaster? That's what Republicans in the Northwest found out when they got a power-sharing promise from the likes of Tina Kotek. I'll get to it next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish wrapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
I've always told you that one party control, no matter which party it is, one party control of any government, whether it's federal or state or local, one party control means disaster for freedom-loving citizens. We can see the results today as the so-called representatives who belong to the Democrat Party renege on a deal to share power with Republicans who represent literally millions of Oregonians. If Democrats don't have double standards, why, they'd have no standards at all. The latest census means Oregon has picked up population, and with it, another seat in the United States Congress, making six in all. Now, when you redraw congressional districts, you're supposed to just balance out the population and follow natural geographic boundaries. Did the Democrats do that in Oregon? No, perish the thought. Instead, the party of slavery gerrymandered the map, making the largely liberal Portland area part of at least two-thirds of all the congressional seats. Now, I want you to visualize this. One of their proposed congressional districts starts in the city of riots, Portland, goes all the way up over a mountain range in central Oregon, and includes the city of Bend 180 miles away. If that ain't gerrymandering, I'll invite naysayers to explain, well, then what exactly is it? Now, I'll remind you that House Speaker and Governor wannabe Tina Kotek made a promise to share power with the minority party. And now she says, I'm not going to do it. It appears you can trust Democrat promises just about as much as you can trust last month's promise by Joe Biden to get all Americans out of Afghanistan before we left, or the promise not to drop drone missiles on small children. Now, from Getter, Andy writes in because he heard us talking about ivermectin. He said, Lars, ketamine is a horse tranquilizer. It's being used by people. Why is that okay, but ivermectin isn't? Ketamine's being advertised on the buses as safe and effective for people to use. I first heard of vitamin K from that Bruce Willis movie Armageddon about 20 years ago. And from Facebook, this note comes in from Kevin. Lars, I'm a combat vet with an 80% disability from the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm a Christian. I'm an American citizen. I sent in a religious exemption request with the district, which is the Oregon Health Authority form, and I feel they violated my religious freedoms to observe free of government interference. Waiting and waiting for results, and yesterday our assistant superintendent, Candy Wallace, sent my supervisor an email to forward to me personally, saying they have received nothing from me. If I am unable to comply by the end of the week, you will no longer work here. I'm hearing that others, too, have submitted documents, and they've been given the same threat. Last I heard, October 18th is the deadline, but it appears that some people are very anxious to throw this disabled vet in Kate Brown's garbage can. Signed sincerely, Kevin. And our question of the day, Philip Davis says, Oregon should have an electoral college that would equalize the opinions of voters throughout the state, since the balance of the population in a given area is so drastically uneven. I'd say so, too. The problem is anything like a state-level electoral college would be unconstitutional, unless, of course, you want to amend the federal constitution, and that is a job and a half. Now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, I'm going to give the Daily Grill to the very idea of taking over a public facility, and I would expand this to any part of the Pacific Northwest. You have facilities that are used by the general public, like the Portland Expo Center, in this case, that are used for shows and exhibitions. They're supposed to be for everyone. But now Portland is looking at it saying, maybe we'll turn it into a gigantic homeless shelter. You know, so the homeless can park their RVs and their cars nearby, and so they can be safe. To take public facilities like this and turn them over to a tiny number of people. There are an estimated 4,000 or 5,000 homeless in Portland. There are about 10,000 or 11,000 in Seattle. We're letting the tail wag the dog, where massive amounts of resources. Seattle just yesterday promised another $50 million for the homeless. Start to do the math on that. Some of them are making better money or having more money associated with them than you are, and you're working and paying your taxes. Our best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest, now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. Online, rivercityusa.com/careers. Tammy writes in, Lars, I want to update you that the compounding pharmacies that were filling prescriptions for ivermectin are now no longer doing so because the state board, Kate Brown, got to them, and they wonder, is that really happening? Or why are people taking the incorrect dose? I thought you'd like to know about it. Also, will you continue to talk about how many illegals are coming across the border? I've got a special segment on that coming up in just a moment. Thanks, Tammy. I appreciate it. Now, I want to tell you something. I don't do a whole lot of birthday wishes. I do wish a happy birthday on April 1st to my granddaughter. But I reserve that just for very special situations. So let me start this way. 418 years ago, in other words, 1923, a little guy by the name of Jerry Frank was born, and he has been my friend for more than 40 years. I consider him one of my best friends ever, and I'd like to check in on him. He's celebrating a birthday today. And I want to make a point about Jerry. Jerry grew up as the fortunate son of a very fortunate family. They formed one of the best department stores in America called Meijer & Frank. It was later taken over and ruined by Macy's, but whatever. Unlike a lot of people who find themselves so blessed, he didn't rest on his laurels. He has given back to the community for more than 9 decades. Until the pandemic of the last 18 months, Jerry acted as the best ambassador the Pacific Northwest has ever seen, speaking to literally hundreds of groups every single year, hundreds of speeches, raising money for charity and good causes, and operating his own businesses as well, multiple businesses. I mean, what can you say about a guy who regularly waits tables at the restaurant he owned? Now, he sold it to the people who worked at the restaurant a while back, and I thought that was a good thing for a boss to do, to say, I'm not going to run it anymore. I'll sell it to my employees so they can do well. He served as the chief of staff to the man I consider one of the best United States senators in American history, the late Marco Hadfield. He served in that role for a quarter of a century, much of it as a so-called dollar-a-year man, meaning he didn't take a salary, kind of like Donald Trump. Jerry takes my daily phone calls with good humor. My friend of more than 40 years, Jerry Frank, whose family founded Meijer & Frank, whose uncle Julius Meijer made history by becoming Oregon's first independent party Jewish governor and who started the state police. Jerry has been a nonagenarian for some time now. He celebrates his birthday today. Jerry likes to disappear on his birthday so his friends can't find him. He comes from a family of leaders, a family that employed tens of thousands over the decades since 1857, a family that produced, as I said, a governor for Oregon. Rest is not in his vocabulary. So it's my pleasure to wish a very happy 98th birthday in honor of Mark Hadfield's dollar-a-year man, the Chief Justice in the Supreme Court of Chocolate Cake, the captain of the Conditerai, a man who's never let a drop of Oregon's great wine or beer or whiskey grace his lips, the man who has been known over the decades as Oregon's third United States Senator, my friend and my mentor, Jerry Frank. A very happy 98th birthday on the 21st of September, 2021. My mom was born on the 22nd of September, 2021. She's no longer around, but Jerry Frank is out there and still going strong. So happy birthday, Jerry. Coming up in a moment, what happens when the Democrats make a deal and then they turn around and say, we're not doing the deal after all? Well, they're cheating. That's what they do. You know, double standards or none at all. We'll get to that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to have your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And for some of you listening on our Radio Northwest Network, I'm aware there was some kind of technical problem near the top of the hour. It's been addressed. The chief engineer is on top of it, and we'll get it taken care of. What the chief engineer cannot fix is what's going on in Salem right now. And I have no doubt that the Democrats in Olympia would like to do the same kind of thing. Just as a recap, America has a census every 10 years as dictated by the federal constitution. You got to count the people. And when you count them, in many cases, they've moved around, which means that some states lose members of Congress and some states gain. Oregon gained a new congressional seat. Washington did not. And so in this case, the folks who get to redraw the congressional districts, so they all represent about the same number of people. It's right in the range of 800,000. The Democrats are in charge because they're in the majority, but they said, don't worry about it. We will play fair. We will include the Republicans in those decisions as sort of a power-sharing arrangement. Well, guess who just threw that arrangement right out the window? That would be Tina Kotek, who wants to stay true to her party because, of course, she plans to run for governor and she wants to make sure she keeps the Democrat Party happy. I wanted to get something on this. I couldn't get a single Republican from the current legislature, and actually I'm better off with a former member of the legislature who has the distinction of being the only man in history, or, you know, only person in history to ever be booted out of the state legislature. And that's because he was too conservative, a former representative or ex-representative, Mike Nierman. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me on.
I want to get your take on the fact that House Speaker Tina Kotek has said, that's it. We made a deal, but we're reneging on the deal. We're throwing it out, and we're going to draw the congressional boundaries any way we please.
And so that's outrageous. That's just completely outrageous. So she's, like you said, she's running for governor, and she's going to have to deal with these people. You know, if she wins, she's going to have to deal with these people and cut deals with them and work with them and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know, they're pretty upset. Part of the deal was that we wouldn't, that the Republicans would cease forcing them to read the bills. That slows the process down. And part of it was that the Republicans wouldn't walk on the session. I think they need to walk on this session and kick it over to Shamia Fagan. Let her do the maps there and just take it out of Tina Kotek's hands. You're okay. Still going to get a raw deal, but at least you take it out of Tina Kotek's hands.
I would agree with you, because that was the next question I was going to ask you, is are they upset? Fine. But are they just making noise, or will they actually do the one thing they can do, which is walk out? Now, let me ask you, do you think the Republicans have the guts to do it? They have done it before. They've also refused to walk out before, where it was a very important issue, and they simply said, no, we're not willing to walk. We have to stay and vote because we get beat up by the press when we don't. Do the Republicans have the guts this time around?
Yeah, I think it's possible, because they seem like they're pretty upset. The other thing that helps them to walk at this session, even though it doesn't have a time limit, it doesn't have a very ambitious agenda. And so there's only two bills on the table. And so to walk in light of that is a little bit easier than to walk in the face of several thousand bills or something. So I think they do have a good opportunity to walk. It'd be interesting to see how they do it.
Now, Mike, I've given my audience my take on this situation, but I want you to bring it home to them, because a lot of this can sound like, you know, Greek to people when you say, okay, they're redrawing districts and they've drawn the districts wrong. They got one district that goes from the outskirts of Portland all the way to Bend somehow. I mean, it's clear gerrymandering. I want you to help people understand why this is so hugely important to the political future, not just of Oregon, but the political future for the whole country, as every state is going through this redistricting.
Yeah, Lars, so I talk to people about this, and you're right. So the whole redistricting and gerrymandering thing is kind of in the tall weeds. But the way that I explain it to people is, if you're a Democrat and you want to cheat, what you do is you take a huge urban area like Portland that's highly Democratic, and you superimpose slices of pizza on it. So the tip of the pizza goes into the middle of the city of Portland, and the crust is way out in the hinterlands there. And so every district has about 55% Democrats and 45% Republicans. That's the way they drew the legislative districts in Lane County. And Lane County has, I think they have 12 legislators there, senators or representatives that have at least part of their district in Lane County. And of those 12, 11 of them are Democrats. That's how you control the process. And so they're doing the same thing. What we could be seeing is, in November of 2022, we could have four congressmen from the state of Oregon that are from the city of Portland. That's the implications of what they've done.
Yeah, four of them, including this weird district that goes all the way to Central Oregon. And what the other thing, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, but when people say, why doesn't the legislature give a damn about where I live? And a lot of people outside of the biggest population centers, Portland, Salem, Kaiser, Eugene, Springfield, and Medford, they say, these people don't represent me. They don't seem to know what I do for a living. They don't seem to care about the issues where I live. And I say, that's right, because you let the Democrats draw these districts so that they're very centered on the big population centers, and they care a lot about the voters in Portland and Salem and Eugene and Medford, and they don't have to give a damn if you live outside the city limits. And so if you wonder, next year or 5 years from now or up to 10 years from now, when the next census comes along, why don't these people care about me? Because you're not necessary to their political survival.
Yep, that's exactly correct, Lars. That's exactly correct.
So how do we make sure that there's pressure put on the Republicans to say, we're going to throw it to Shamia Fagan? Now, I realize Fagan is even more partisan, is an even more partisan Democrat than Tina Kotek. But still in all, if you take it out of Kotek's hands, then at least it sends a message. We don't like the sleazy way that you're redrawing the districts.
Yep, and you know, I'll tell you, I just can't underscore this enough, is that, you know, your word is your bond, and that's true not just in politics, but should be more true in politics. And for her to just flagrantly renege on this is so egregious. That's just so over the top there. And I hope voters remember that when they vote for governor in, you know, in November 2022, that that this is a person who doesn't have enough integrity to say, yeah, I'll make a deal with you, and then to stand by the deal. And I mean, I think that's just what Democrats stand for is doing that. So I hope everybody remembers this.
Now, Mike, just to be clear, was there anything the Republicans did where they didn't hold up their end of the bargain, that, you know, in which she had promised, we'll share power, we'll do our part, you do your part? Did the Republicans renege in any way?
No, because we immediately stopped reading the bills, and they never left town. They never denied him a quorum. So that's pretty easy. That's pretty there's no subjectivity to that. That's very easy to check what the Republican side of the deal was. So
that's
over with. That's over and done with. They can't go back and reopen that session and start reading the bills. So so that's really sleazy to do that.
It is, because, Mike, I've always said in business dealings with people, I always say I make sure I uphold my end. Then if you don't uphold your end, then I have a firmer ground to call you on that. Both sides decide to start saying, well, we're not going to do what we're supposed to do because we don't think they're going to do it. If the Republicans have really stuck by their guns, I just wish I could get a few other Republicans on. But, Mike, actually, you're more conservative than anybody else I could talk to today. One last thing, quickly. How's life treating you, an ex lawmaker?
Good. I'm busier than I should be. But one of the things I'm busy with right now, if I can do a little commercial, is we're doing a referendum on the gun bill that they passed in the last legislative session. So if you go to responsibleresponse.com and download one of those petitions, sign it, send it in. We got to get those in by Friday. Is the deadline.
That's a good deal. Thanks, Mike Nierman, formerly of the state legislature. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and happy Tuesday from the Radio Northwest Network. Honestly, provocative talk for Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Twitter poll today. Should Republican lawmakers, in this case in Oregon, although I could extend this to Boise and Olympia easily when it happens there, should Republican lawmakers walk out to stop the gerrymandering of congressional seats by Tina Kotek? Yes, I know it'll go to the Secretary of State, Shamia Fagan. Yes, I know that Fagan, if anything, is more liberal than Tina Kotek. Still, I think it's a good way to answer this kind of duplicity from Tina Kotek. She makes a deal with Republicans. The Republicans, as usual, uphold their end of it. And then when the Democrats cheat and simply say, no, we're going to drop out, we don't have to listen to what you have to say at all. You've upheld your end. We don't have to uphold our end. That kind of duplicity should have some kind of answer. Well, I got this email from Wyatt, who says, Lars, I just heard you talking to former state rep Mike Nierman about Tina Kotek's breaking of the deal with the Republicans. Frankly, this outrage from State House Republicans is laughable. That deal was broken from the start. They sold us out, meaning Republicans sold us out on our Second Amendment rights and so much else. And if they didn't know the Democrats are going to turn around and break it off, no matter what, then they're too stupid to be in office in any case. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's start with Phil. Phil, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Lars. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm a former county commissioner here in Deschutes County, and I'm also the chair of the Republican Party currently. We testified on this. You know, they wanted everybody to testify about the redistricting, and then they didn't change anything, really. And I was, you already kind of addressed the issues with the congressional districts, but I'll tell you how absurd it is in Deschutes County. For them to reach down here all the way from the east side of the Willamette River through East Portland, Gresham, et cetera, through Hood River, the Dalles, Jefferson County, the Bend, they're trying to get Bend, which is a pocket of Democrats, but a county that's very balanced. There's 47,000 Democrats in our county, 44,000 Republicans, and about 58,000 or 60,000 unaffiliated independents, et cetera. So it's very, very, very evenly balanced. And yet this would make a very Democrat district from East Portland all the way into Bend. And all it takes is Bend and Sisters. It leaves Redmond and East Deschutes County and Lapine out of it. So
yep, all the most conservative areas.
Yep, yep. And this is also reflected in the House districts, which we right now we have what's called the donut and the donut hole, and the donor hole has been, and it has a Democrat legislator now, but the rest of the county has three other Republican legislators. What they've done is they've cut it up. They've cut Bend in half, and they're going to try to get two Democrat districts now by going towards Sisters again, et cetera. So what people need to understand is these things are long. It's not just what it affects now. It makes these areas become more Democrat, too, because all of a sudden the people start accessing the government the government systems, and they start working through the existing party of Democrats. And so
yep. It
really is a very bad for us. And
I tried to get across that this isn't just a problem right now. It's a problem for the next decade till the next census. And as you say, if they get these firmly established by the next census, the census will change the count a little bit. It may nibble around the edges, but it won't make major changes in it. So this will be locked in place for a long, long time. And people, again, I can't tell you how many times I get emails and phone calls from people saying, these people in the big cities don't know what we're doing, don't care what we're doing, don't care about our livelihoods or our businesses. They don't share the same values that we do when it comes to decisions about schools. And I say, well, this is where it gets decided, at least in part. Yeah. Once you've set up all the pawns and the chess pieces, it's real easy to win the game if you set them up to your advantage.
Yep, you're exactly right, and that's what they're doing. And you can try to imagine living in Bend and having Earl Blumenauer be our our congressional representative. And we want the leadership that, has riots every night, or the homeless thing that they have in Portland being our leadership. And like you said, they've spread this out over four districts. I call it the partisan spider web of the Democrat Party. They're reaching all the way to the coast, all the way down to Yamhill and Polk County. It's so blatant. And I hope the legislature, the public.
I hope they do, because Phil, the Democrats will gripe all day long and twice on Sunday about gerrymandering if it's gerrymandering that doesn't help them. But as soon as it benefits them, I mean, the idea, like you said, of a congressional district that goes all the way from the outskirts of Portland on the east side all the way down to Central Oregon and Bend, and then splits communities in half, it's absolute insanity. Thanks for the call. Hey, Chris, we're close to the top, but we've got some time. What's on your mind?
Hey, really quickly, Lars, I ran for office down in last election cycle here as a Republican in Oregon's first congressional district, and I mirror what Mike Nierman said. It really is like a pizza pie, and if you think about it, there's two options. One leaves the whole sort of cow pie in Washington and Washington and Multnomah County, and Washington County in Oregon is really the bellwether for the rest of the state. If you watch what's happening with the congressional district maps, it's going to change either way, but it's going to go highly Democratic. So we had come up with a challenge. The other thing that's not being mentioned is the NAV vote is bigger than the Republican vote in most areas of Oregon now. So that's kind of the undetermined factor. If you go by population, which is what you said, if you split Washington and Multnomah County in two, it comes out directly right at the number that it needs to hit. So,
and that's what it should be. Chris, thanks very much. Coming up after the hour, have you heard about the Haitians who took over and, well, they actually took over a bus and tried to escape after being nabbed?
Failure to enforce laws that exist in the United States leads to chaos, and chaos leads to inhumanity. The Biden administration is a man-made disaster of inhumanity of epic proportions.
That is Texas Governor Greg Abbott, and this is the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you with me on a Tuesday. Always glad to get to your phone calls, and I will get to them. Don't forget, naysayers go to the head of the line. So if somebody wants to call this show and give the Biden administration props and kudos for their massive accomplishment on America's southern border, which has for the last several months, led to 200,000 plus people illegally crossing America's border. And then we ran into something truly bizarre a couple of weeks ago. I mean, we knew that there were illegal border crossers from almost every country on planet Earth. They've counted more than 150. But then we began to see huge numbers of Haitians crossing our border. And a lot of people who know a little bit about geography say, How the heck did they get to the Mexican border? Well, an awful lot of them have been brought into Central and South America. They make their way through Mexico. And yes, I have a feeling they have a lot of help. And the biggest help they're getting, as Governor Greg Abbott identifies, is from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the president and vice president, who have steadfastly ignored this problem. Take a listen to Governor Greg Abbott.
If you go back a year ago, President Biden campaigned on having open borders in the United States. I'm sure most people, when they heard President Biden, either when he was as a candidate or as president, talk about open borders, they had no idea it would lead to the type of chaos that we've witnessed just behind me for day after day after day. Contrary to what Kamala Harris talked about trying to solve this problem in the Northern Triangle, what the world is witnessing now is the open border policies that are being utilized by the Biden administration. It attracts people from across the entire globe, including people coming from more than 150 different countries.
So I should explain, if you hear in the background, you hear trucks, you hear helicopters, you hear boats. Governor Abbott was holding a press conference just a few hours ago, right there next to the Rio Grande River, where we've seen an absolutely unbelievable sight. Helicopter pictures, which, by the way, the Biden administration tried to use the FAA to keep news media from flying both drones and other kinds of aircraft over the area to look at the more than 12,000 Haitians who are now camped out under a massive freeway bridge that spans the Rio Grande from Mexico into the United States. 12,000 people. And if you say, well, really, I feel sorry for those people. I'll tell you what, on that note, I want you to listen to Brandon Judd, who is with the National Border Patrol Council. He represents the Border Patrol agents. Listen to what he has to say about those people under the bridge.
What you see underneath the bridge, that is not humane. The Biden administration promised that they would have a humane process. That is not humane.
Now, there have been, as of today, about 1.3 million illegal aliens who've crossed just since Joe Biden took the oath of office back on the 20th of January. By the end of the year, the estimate is 2 million illegal aliens will come into this country, a country that has already had economic problems because of the pandemic, because of government shutdowns, because of arguments over masks and vaccine and everything else. We have businesses shut down right and left. We have shoveled out literally trillions of dollars saying we've got a country in trouble. Do we have the ability to take in 2 million refugees this way? Well, the problem was too big for Joe Biden to do anything about. He had, as Governor Abbott pointed out, he'd actually created the problem. So what he did was he took this offending piece of material, use your imagination, and he handed it to Vice President Kamala Harris. And what does she have to say about all those people coming in from Haiti? Listen to this.
Listen, the whole point is that we have to understand Haiti. I mean, talk about a country that has just experienced so much tragedy, that has been about natural disasters, that the head of state assassinated. And we really have to do a lot more to recognize that as a member of the Western Hemisphere, we've got to support some very basic needs that the people of Haiti have to get back up.
To get back, what is she talking about? We've got people in Haiti who are supposed to stay in Haiti. They are not allowed to come into the United States, and especially not illegally, not vaccinated, not checked, not vetted. And by the way, take a listen to this. This is Art Del Cueto, who is on the National Border Patrol Council, where he talks about the fact that we're bringing diseases into this country. Take a listen.
People need to put pride aside and realize what works and what doesn't work. What was working under the last administration is definitely something that can stop the flow now, and they need to realize that. We're losing agents. The morale is down. Agents are quitting currently. You know, they have the mandate for the COVID vaccine, so a lot of the agents are choosing, you know, to leave the job. All the while, we're allowing illegal individuals to enter this country that have not received any vaccines, not just the COVID, but the regular vaccines that many of us receive as child.
Now, that's Art Del Cueto. He also talks about something that's grabbed everybody's attention. There's both video and there's a still picture of a Border Patrol agent on a horse. And all the liberals have got their hair on fire about this. They say, why, look at him. He's whipping that poor Haitian. No, he's not whipping him. This is being made into a big cause celeb, as we've seen other single pictures or videos turned into big political statements. And Art Del Cueto points out, you don't know what you're looking at. Take a listen to how he explains it.
You look at the pictures of, you know, the horse patrol. What they were doing out there was within policy. They were not whipping anyone. They don't carry whips. They don't get assigned whips. What they do is a training technique that has been shown to them to make sure that no one takes over their horse. It was to protect the horse, to protect the rider, and to protect the individual that was trying to cause chaos and knock down that rider from that horse. So they twirl that the reins to protect everything and make sure everything's done correctly. But nobody was getting whipped.
Now, I want to skip ahead to one soundbite from Brandon Judd, because something very disturbing happened. They've told the Haitians, we're going to take you back to Haiti. We're going to fly you back to Haiti at American taxpayer expense. Well, guess what happened when the Haitians found out, we're not going to let you stay in America and just come into our country illegally? Listen to Brandon Judd.
We saw something yesterday that we knew was going to happen. When those people that were in buses south of Kingsville, Texas, when they found out that they were going to be sent back to Haiti, they took the bus over and they fled. If it wasn't for the men and women in uniform, DPS officers, if it wasn't for that, we do not know what would happen.
Yeah, that's Brandon Judd, who represents the National Border Patrol Council. This is a problem that's been created by the Biden administration, and Governor Abbott knows it. Take a listen to what he says. The open border problem.
And when you have an administration that is not enforcing the law in this country, when you have an administration that has abandoned any pretense of securing the border and securing our sovereignty, you see the onrush of people like what we saw walking across this dam that is right behind me.
That is Governor Greg Abbott. Texas has already allocated $2 billion to seal up that border because the Congress and the president won't do it. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we attempt to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. If you want to connect, you can do that. Naysayers always go to the head of the line, and usually I take naysayer emails first as well. That's talk@LarsLarson.com. Or if you want to jump in with your own voice, I'm glad to have you do it, even if you disagree. The number is 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll today, should Republican lawmakers, in this case in Oregon, although I'd extend it to Washington State as well, should they walk out and deny a quorum to the turncoat Democrats who have reneged on their deal? Their deal was, if Republicans will go along with a few things, then Democrats will hold to their end of the bargain when it comes to writing the new congressional districts, because Oregon is adding a sixth seat in Congress and the map has to be redrawn. Instead, they've done what Mike Nierman calls the pizza pie approach, where four out of the six districts end up connecting to the state of, to the city of Portland. I was going to say the state of Portland. It sometimes seems like a state. But should the Republicans say, we're going to stand up, we're going to walk out, we're going to deny you a quorum, they say to Tina Kotek, the House Speaker, who wants to run for governor, clearly she wants to be able to do it, just say to her, you're not getting this decision. We'll hand it off to the Secretary of State. The result probably won't be any worse than what Tina Kotek would have done. It's not any better either, but at least you send a message to Kotek. We don't like your duplicity. Even though most of us who've watched the Democrats for any length of time understand if the Democrats didn't have double standards, they'd have no standards at all. But this redistricting is absolutely key to understanding what's going on and the decisions that will be made for you and your family and your business and your schools for the next 10 years or so till the next census. Today's Twitter poll, at Lars Larson Show or at LarsLarson.com. If you don't like Twitter, go to my website. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. I'm going to go to this caller, and usually we don't put names on people who don't want to be identified and harassed because of their point of view. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
What's on your mind?
That last little segment there you spoke about, I'm actually a border patrol agent. And
thank
I wanted
you for
to get
what
some
you do.
And, all right, thank you. Thank you. And I just wanted to give some insight on the stuff that's going on. I mean, I honestly think that this administration's plan is to, well, they've said it in the past. I mean, look who's in power, right? Look who's in control, that they want to dwindle the agency. And in essence, that's what they've been doing. With everything that's been going on the southern border and deployments from agents from northern border stations to coastal stations, you name it, people are retiring left and right. Now they're forcing the mRNA injections, and more people are going to leave, you know. So I just wanted to get the listeners to understand that everything that we have done in this agency, and I've done it for over 20 years, it's pretty much down the toilet now with what's going on right now. And it's very disheartening. It's very frustrating. And we're, in essence, not allowed to do our job.
No, you're not. And by the way, we've given people the numbers. We've said, you know, you've got about 6,000 border agents, and they say we're going to be doing maybe 3,000 arrests a month while 200,000 people are coming into the country. And you wouldn't have to be in law enforcement or have any background in immigration law to say 200,000 people are going to come into the country illegally every month all summer long, and there's still 200,000 a month coming in, and you're going to stop and arrest 3,000 of them and write them a ticket and tell them to show up in court in a few months. And when they don't show up, you'll have no way to get them back because they'll be in sanctuary cities like Portland and Seattle. They understand what the game is, and you know that the Democrats – they just got struck down by the Senate parliamentarian. They wanted to add into this massive federal government spending plan of $3.5 trillion. They wanted to add in 8 million green cards. So clearly to me, what they want to do is take every illegal alien who's already in America and the illegal aliens coming in and hand them a green card. And 5 years from now, they all have the potential at least to be citizens and voters. And so it's their plan to extend the life of the Democrat Party, which has been losing its base for a long time. And they figure we'll just replenish it with people who've come in illegally. And then we grant them one of the biggest prizes that anybody on planet Earth could ever get, the right to stay and work and live in the United States and vote in our elections. And they'll be loyal to the Democrat Party probably for the rest of their lives. And that will keep the Democrat Party alive. That's what they're doing. They're playing politics with the future of the country and the border.
Right. And now you got all of us in, like I say, in stations that are not on the southwest border, and they're taking everybody, not everybody, but they're taking a big chunk of people every month to go down south. What does that do for all the rest of the border, the coastal border, the northern border? Is it even more open?
People have forgotten about that because they understand that when there is a crisis on our southern border, and so you call up the agencies that would ordinarily keep an eye on our northern border, and you say, we need 10 of your guys and gals, we need 20, we need 100, and they shift them, and they forget. If people really care about things like drug overdose deaths, they should understand, where are those drugs coming from? The DEA says 90% of the fentanyl, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine is coming in across our southern border. So when you have the ability of 200,000 people to just walk into the country with no interdiction at much at all, other than a few thousand arrests, it's open season. One of the sound bites I didn't play was from Steve McCraw, who is with the Texas Department of Public Safety. And he says, the cartels are loving this because the cartels say it's been hard for us to get all this stuff across the border that makes us all this money. Well, now we can just walk it across the border, drive it across the border, because everybody's paying attention to this gigantic mess that Joe Biden has created. So if your family members, if one of your family members or one of your friends has died of a fentanyl overdose, a heroin overdose, a cocaine or methamphetamine, if they're messed up on drugs, you can thank Joe Biden right now.
And 100%. And now the people, let's talk about the topic that a lot of people don't talk about, don't remember, is since we're so busy with the people that are just turning themselves to us without a fight, without trying to get away. Now, the people that have been deported for heinous crimes such as murder, as rape, etc. Now's the time for them to come back. And that's what they're doing because we are so tied up with everything else. We're so overwhelmed with everything else. They just got a free highway. These guys are coming and ain't no stopping them. There's no way to stop them.
No, and I'll tell you something. I really admire something I didn't mention during that segment. The job of controlling our borders is a job of the federal government, and the federal government often objects if states get in the way. In this case, the federal government wants a wide-open door on our southern border. Joe Biden said so as a candidate. As Governor Abbott pointed out, the Texas legislature has now allocated another $2 billion. Now, you know, if I lived in Texas and paid taxes in Texas, I'd think you've got a problem created by Joe Biden that now becomes a $2 billion bill for us, just the people in Texas. The job of guarding our border is the entire country's job, and yet Texas is having it dumped on them, and they have no choice but to act. And I thank God bless them for allocating another $2 billion for border control. Hey, thanks for what you do in uniform. You got to know that Americans, real Americans, including immigrant Americans who did it legally, we appreciate what the Border Patrol does. Joe Biden doesn't give a damn. Thanks so very much for the call. Coming up, did Joe Biden's speech at the UN today make America look weak to the rest of the world? And did he do it on purpose? We're going to talk about that coming up in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. But part of how I occupied my morning when I'm doing prep for the show was I was watching Joe Biden's speech at the United Nations because, well, occasionally we'll see presidents like Barack Obama say absolutely outlandish things at this speech to the United Nations because the audience is effectively every other country on the planet or almost all of them. Presidents will often say crazy things. But I don't think that Joe Biden projected American strength or American preeminence or American exceptionalism. I think what he projected was American weakness. But I'm not a good measure of that. The man who really takes the measure of that is Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, who's an expert in national security and foreign policy challenges at Heritage. Colonel, it's good to have you back on the program. What did you make of Joe Biden's presentation to the United Nations today?
Well. Funny you should ask, because I literally just did a piece on the Fox News website on this. So this is really, to me, an absolutely fascinating speech, because the speech, without any context whatsoever, would kind of be just kind of your typical UN globalist progressive speech. And if Biden had given this speech on the first day of his presidency, I think it would have been remarkably unexceptional. But when you add in the context of what's going on in American leadership and you overlay it on the speech looks ridiculous. And can I just give you some quick examples?
I want you to, because he talked about America being at an inflection point and that it's a decisive point. I thought, he's talking about this from the standpoint of disastrous exit from Afghanistan, huge human tragedy and killing children with a drone strike, losing American service members in uniform because of a botched withdrawal. His own border is in disaster. Capitol Hill isn't going well for him. He hasn't handled COVID well since he took over as president. But he's telling the rest of the world, this is the point where we make the big difference. And I would think that the rest of the world might look at him and say, you can't even handle your own country. What are you talking about?
Well, just I look at Afghanistan, for example. So he said things like, we are there for allies, after he abandons 38 million Afghans. He said, we're going to be the world's champion of rights for women and girls, after he let the Taliban take over and their treatment of women is absolutely atrocious. He said, we're going to hold the Taliban accountable when the U.S. policy is actually to enable and empower and engage the Taliban and make them more powerful. He said, we don't need to have a footprint on the ground in order to deal with terrorists. When we have a drone strike, which actually just kills civilians. So the whole Afghan thing was literally, you know, head smack after head smack after head smack. And it didn't stop there. It goes on and on. He says, we're going to be a champion for democracy in Cuba, when he basically abandoned the Cuban protesters in favor of supporting the authoritarian regime. We're going to be the champion of human rights when we have an absolutely massive humanitarian catastrophe on our southern border, enabling human trafficking and all other kinds of abuses. And it goes on and on and on. We are going to be the champion of diplomacy. Only days after the French,
the French
take their ambassador out of the United States because our diplomacy is so bad. So if you're an American look, obviously, if you're a U.N. bureaucrat, you think it's a wonderful speech. But if you're an American enemy or an American ally, you look at this and realize it's completely disengaged from what America is actually doing. It's like the little kid on the grocery cart being pushed down the aisle, you know, turning that little wheel thinking he's driving the cart.
Colonel, I want to ask you about something in your military background, because the other thing I see in the background, although the major media hasn't done much with it, but Bob Woodward comes out with his book, and I know he does a lot of books, and he maybe plays fast and loose with the truth, but he quotes a general, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who's General Milley, who says, I took over America's nukes for a period of time under an American president. And I don't hear any objection from Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or any of the Democrats saying that's outrageous. Our military is not run by the military. Our military has always been under civilian command. Why? Because the Constitution says it answers to civilian control, period. The commander-in-chief is not a member of the military, but he salutes the military, but he's the guy in charge. And we just had one of the top generals say the military may sometimes seize control of the entire military from its civilian control. I found that idea absolutely, you know, stunning that nobody, especially the president, you know, the current president did not say the military has no right to seize control of itself from the civilian commander in chief. And because he didn't, I think it says something to the rest of the world, because you know there are countries on this planet where the military is kind of its own little animal, and they're sort of under the control of the government of a country, and I could name a few countries. I think you could probably name more. And you say, but they're, you know, it's not that the Chinese necessarily tell the PLA what to do, and the PLA just snaps to and salutes. That the PLA sometimes makes its own decisions, you know, with or without the input of their communist masters. And are we becoming that country? And can the rest of the world trust a country that has now ceded control from the civilian sector of its military to whoever happens to have, you know, the greatest amount of bars or stars on their shoulder?
So I have two thoughts on that. One is,
all right.
Look, I have no confidence in the Woodward book, and without all the context and information, I don't know what to make all of that. Having said that,
but Milley admitted he said it.
No, well, having said that, this chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I have zero confidence in. He has demonstrated over and over again in this administration that he is willing to fundamentally parrot political talking points from the president. So Kerry, the political war, which is not his job. His job is to provide military advice to the president of the United States, not essentially act like a political pawn in the president. And they've done this on climate change. They've done this on critical race theory. They've done this on defending Afghanistan over and over. I don't think in my estimation, Milley is not qualified and not serving appropriately in the role of the chairman joins his staff, and he shouldn't be there. That's one. So the second point is in terms of how this administration talks about this. This administration, from the podium in the White House, is more addicted to lying and excuse making than OxyContin. I mean, they are incapable of being honest with the American people on virtually any issue. And I find it very, very difficult to accept anything they say unless I have a way to prove that it's true. So just an example that's on the headlines right now, when they said, you know, we've got this big thing going on in Del Rio in Texas, there's, you know, 15,000 people there, and they say, we're deporting people. Well, they've deported about 600. There's 15,000 people there. The rest of them, they're just letting in the United States. So 90% of the people are actually coming in the United States. So when they say we're deporting people and they don't need vaccines because they're just not going to go back home, that's a lie.
Yep.
And it's just a lie. And it's a demonstrably easy to prove lie. And yet they say it over and over again. So if they say we have confidence in Milley, to me, that's a meaningless statement, because I have no trust that what they're telling me is true.
I'm talking to Lieutenant Colonel James Carafano. Colonel, it's always a pleasure, and I'll leave you with this. Did you see Mayorkas, the head of Homeland Security, yesterday declaring, we don't have an open border? I mean, I thought the guy is channeling Baghdad Bob. No, there are no American troops in Iraq right now. No, we don't have an open border. James Carafano is now an expert, a foreign policy expert at Heritage. We appreciate his input. Back in just a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and certainly your phone calls and your emails are welcome right here. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. I want to share with you a couple of things, and one of them has to do with unemployment, because I mentioned this earlier in the show, but I'm stunned by this. For the last about 9 months, I've been asking, if we have millions of jobs available in the United States, and here in the Northwest, hundreds of thousands of available jobs. Oregon, for example, has about 98,000 available jobs, still has about 122,000 people on unemployment. That sounds like a problem that could solve itself. Would every unemployed person match up with every open job? No, I'm not suggesting that. But if even half of the people who are currently unemployed, with the unemployment rate already dropping below 5% in the Portland metro, Seattle has seen drops as well. Washington State is below the national average for unemployment. Oregon is below the national average for unemployment. Now, some of you will point out, well, they only count the people who are drawing unemployment benefits as those people who are listed as unemployed. But the number of jobs that are available right now, we have added back more than two-thirds of all the jobs that were lost at the very beginning of the pandemic. And remember that prior to the pandemic, both America and the Pacific Northwest were enjoying one of the most robust economies we had ever seen in history. And for the most part, what got in the way of it over the last 12 months or so has been government. It isn't the disease per se. It's the government saying we have to shut everything down, even though I think we've seen with our own lying eyes that shutting everything down doesn't necessarily stop the disease. Masking everybody up doesn't necessarily stop the disease. There are some things that might stop the disease, or at least stop the hospitals from being overwhelmed. But when I ask the employment division, now that President Biden, because unemployment is actually funded at the federal level, but administered by the states. You have to understand that. The feds get the money, the states allocate it out. Well, since March of last year, the Employment Division has issued almost 250,000 decisions to about 150,000 people. And they have said, we're going to deny benefits. And there are a whole host of reasons that they deny benefits. One, for example, are you able, available, and actively seeking work? More than 40,000 people were told, you're not actually out there trying to get a job, so therefore you don't get unemployment benefits. That's a good thing. Discharge for misconduct. Now, they don't specify what kind of misconduct. Almost 16,000 people were denied benefits for that reason. Failure to register with iMatch Skills. That's a program the state runs to try to say, what are your skills? We'll try to find you a job. 16,000 people didn't even bother to register with this program. Now, whether the program is effective or not, if you're told to get the unemployment benefits, you have to sign up so that we can match your skills with the available jobs. Apparently, for some people, that was too much. And then you had almost 40,000 people who quit. It's called voluntarily leaving work without good cause. 39,145 people simply quit the job they had. I know that sounds unbelievable, but it also suggests when somebody quits a job without good cause, that's 39,000 jobs that are then available to somebody else. And if you say, but it's not my dream job, it's not my ideal job, it doesn't necessarily meet all the criteria for pay and benefits and time off. Well, you know what? Any port in a storm. If you're unemployed, if you actually want to work, and I think the real truth of this is that an awful lot of people don't want to work. They want to get a check from the state. They want it direct deposited to their account. They want some stimmy checks. They want some unemployment checks. They want some child care benefit checks. They want all the checks they can get. And unfortunately, right now, Oregon and Washington both have governors who want to shovel out the free money as much as they possibly can. But the number that just grabbed me by the throat was the number I actually asked the unemployment folks for. I said to them, if you've made it a rule that says if you're offered a job and you turn it down, you are no longer allowed to be on unemployment benefits. Joe Biden himself said back in May, we are changing the rules back. We loosened them up during the height of the pandemic a year ago. You're now a year and a half ago. And we're simply going to say you've got to go and look for work. And if you're offered a job, you have to take it. And if you decide not to take the job, then you're no longer going to be on benefits. And I thought, I've heard the story from employers who say, I keep offering people work and they keep turning me down. And sometimes they do it rather cleverly. Somebody will walk in. I don't know how many of you started in your first job working 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. I know I didn't. My first job in radio was working 10 to midnight, 2 hours on the clock at $1.85 an hour, 2 hours on the clock, 10 p.m. to midnight. So at the end of the week, I would have 10 hours in and I would get paid something about in the range of $20 minus taxes. Most people don't start working 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. And I've heard from employers that folks who clearly don't want to work, they'll walk in and they'll say, I'm only available to work 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. I don't work weekends. I don't work evenings. I don't work double shifts. I don't do this. I don't do that. Now, do you have a job for me? And they found that's the way to avoid working. The state of Oregon in the last year and a half has denied benefits to all of 341 people. That's all. 341 people who've been cut off for turning down a paying job. You know, if the state was a bit more aggressive, employers might find it a little bit easier to hire people because we'd be cutting people off left and right. You got the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It is a Tuesday, and we serve the Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And of course, you're invited to the conversation. It seems to be a target-rich environment today. We have a massive problem on our southern border. Well, we have since Joe Biden became president, but it's become worse in the last week or so. We've got Haitians pouring into the country by the tens of thousands, and we're told that there are more convoys on the way. And you wonder, how'd they get from Haiti to South America and Central America and even to Mexico? Well, that's because I think there are aid groups out there, including Catholic Charities, I think, is one of those that has helped people get from Haiti to Mexico and from Mexico to try to get into the United States. And now American taxpayers are being told, and you get to ship them home on airplanes at your expense. So that's on the agenda. We've got terrible Ted Wheeler, mayor of Portland, who has plans to blame the riots that have beleaguered so many American cities. I haven't seen even Jenny Durkin in Seattle do this yet. But Ted Wheeler wants to have a vote tomorrow and adopt a report that says who's to blame for all that rioting and looting and arson and, in some cases, murders in both Seattle and Portland, about 36 murders across the landscape of America. Who's to blame? Well, let's blame the folks that we've been beating up on for a year and a half. Let's blame the cops. Consider this. The City Council of Portland is going to consider a report tomorrow that puts the biggest part of the blame for violence at political protests on the police. The report presented by the Citizens Review Committee, and this is one of the dangers of these so-called citizens committees. They're really more like political activist committees. They call it the Citizens Review Committee Crowd Control and Use of Force Work Group. I mean, imagine this. And they say, we took a hard look at the police. In response to the murder of George Floyd by police in May of 2020, thousands of Portlanders took to the streets daily for months in protest of police brutality. Remember the ones that the TV talking heads kept saying, mostly peaceful protests, except for the murder, the assault, the looting, the arson, the riots, the assault on cops, setting police bureaus on fire in both Portland and Seattle, and trying to burn the cops inside, and telling the cops to their faces, we want you dead. Yeah, it's all the fault of the police. During these protests, the group says many concerning confrontations between the police and the community occurred. In response, this work group set out to gather community input. They went out to say, hey, all you folks who are rioting, who do you think's to blame? And they said, the cops, of course. The resulting report offers stories from citizens who had experienced police violence and hate. I don't think it's police violence and hate. I think what's happening is if you decide to go out and take part in a riot, we want the police to stop the riot. Sometimes they don't get it by saying pretty please. The report shows that Portland police engaged in aggressive crowd control measures. No kidding. You mean they didn't just walk up and say, hey guys, could y'all go home? Actually, the police usually do that. They say this has been declared an unlawful assembly. You need to break it up. So what are the proposals of this so-called Citizens Committee? Make permanent the existing ban on use of CS gas by police and extend it to other chemical weapons used for crowd management. Adopt soft clothes for the protest response. No protective gear for the cops. Opt for ordinary patrol uniforms or clothing that does not suggest the expectation of violence or combat. So in other words, we're going to ask people who serve in blue and tan uniforms to show up with no protective gear. How do you suppose they're going to do, given that some of these mobs have decided to attack the police, to hit them in the eyes with lasers, to hit them in the heads with bricks, in some cases to shoot other citizens, and you want the police to show up with no protective gear? You're asking for the police to simply lose in that case, and that doesn't make any sense. So we've got that as well. And we just got word a short time ago, the body of Gabby Petito of Florida has now been identified in an autopsy. And there is at least one game camera photo. If you're into hunting, as I am, you understand you put game cameras out where you think the deer and the elk are going to be. Sometimes you'll catch a cougar. Sometimes if you're in the southern part of the United States, you catch illegal aliens on game cameras, but they're not considered game. In any case, they apparently got a picture of Brian Laundry out in the woods. So I'm wondering, is that guy actually out on the run from the authorities? And is there going to be a manhunt? He seems like the number one suspect in the murder. It appears to be murder of his girlfriend, Gabby Petito. We'll bring you details. That one seems to be breaking by the minute. But I want to get to your calls first. Let's go to Trini, who is calling in. Trini, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And what's on your mind? Hello?
Oh, hi.
Hi, Trini. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk about, you know, the people that are unemployed, and maybe some of them are the unvaccinated that don't want to go to their job because they don't want to get the vaccine.
The vaccine mandates are relatively new. The people sitting on their butts collecting an unemployment check for a year and a half are relatively old.
Yeah, and so I'm hoping that these people will continue to sit on their butts, because that way I can go out and have my pick and choose of what job I want. You know,
kind of a benefit. Kind of do you have a job now?
I'm in healthcare, and I'm going to be losing my job on the 18th, and so I'm hoping that I can get a job that's, you know, doesn't require the vaccine.
Did you tell the boss I want a religious exemption?
I don't think they accept it here.
Well, I think as long as here is in the United States, I think you'll find that you can get a religious exemption, and it's really tough for an employer to deny it. But you have to actually ask for it.
Because when you're in the meeting, they don't say anything about a religious exemption.
No, they're not going to offer you a path out. But Trini, I'm saying fight back. Keep your job. Tell them. In fact, I've been telling people there's a great nonprofit group. I've got no other tie other than that I think the group is a good group. It's called firstliberty.org. They're funded by generous people who fund it out of the goodness of their heart. And they have a bunch of lawyers, and they sat down and they put together a toolkit. And all you can get it on any smart device or a desktop computer. Just go to firstliberty.org, download it. It has letters. You put your name in the letter and you say, boss, I'd like a religious exemption. And by the way, if your boss says, well, we don't grant those, you say, well, this says federal law says you have to.
Okay.
What do you think? You could keep your job.
Would you
like to keep your job?
That would be awesome because I kind of enjoy it.
If you don't believe me, pick up your smartphone and any device and go to firstliberty.org. Again, my only tie is I think they're a good group, and we occasionally have their lawyers on. We've had them on for years to talk about issues just like this one. Firstliberty.org. Get the toolkit. Tell the boss, I want a religious exemption, and if you tell me you're not going to grant it to me, you may have a problem. I may have to file a complaint with Labor and Industries in Washington or Boley in Oregon. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I want to go to your phone calls in just a moment. I want to bring you up to date on the latest developments in a murder case that we've been following since about 2 weeks ago. It involves a young lady, 22, by the name of Gabby Petito. Her body was found over this last weekend, and just within the last hour or so, the FBI and the family's lawyers have indicated that an autopsy has demonstrated two things. Number one, Gabby Petito died of homicide. And if you say, well, what does that mean? Homicide means man death. And what it means is that someone was killed by someone. A homicide can be a negligent homicide. It can be a murder. It can be an aggravated murder. But it's a death caused by another human being that caused the death. Suicide, of course, is self-killing. But homicide is when a person has been killed by somebody else. Now, the killing could be justified. I seriously doubt it in this case. But that's one development, that she died, that it is Gabby Petito, and that she died of homicide. And a lot of people have been asking questions about what happened to this couple. They apparently had been traveling around for a couple of months in the western United States. They actually planned to end up in Portland, Oregon, where they were going to visit friends. And they had been in Wyoming, and they'd been in Utah, and they'd been a number of places. There was even one text message to her mom that said she was in Yosemite, which is in California. Her mom doesn't exactly believe that because Gabby Petito, I believe, was already dead at that point, and her boyfriend had already driven her vehicle, a vehicle she owned, back to Florida, where he then sheltered himself at his parents' home, and refused to talk to the cops. And his parents refused to talk to the cops. And I think that raises a whole host of moral issues, that if you thought your son or daughter had killed somebody, if you thought the circumstances simply did not explain it any other way, would you offer that person shelter? Would you say, well, we're going to see if we can get you off on those charges? But the police did stop this couple at one point. That all started with a call to 911. Take a listen to what the person watching what was going on in the van between Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie, what was going on when they saw it as that van drove through their town.
Hi, I'm calling. I'm right on the corner of Main Street by Moonflower, and we're driving by, and I'd like to report a domestic dispute of Florida with the white van, Florida license plate, white land, gentleman, about 5'6", beard. They just drove off. They're going down Main Street. They made a right onto Main Street from Moonflower.
Or what were they doing?
Cooperative, but what did you say?
What were they doing?
We drove by and the gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
Now, that's what the call was to 911. So the cops stopped them, and there's a body cam. And this is where body cameras, I think, are incredibly valuable. They talked to Gabby Petito, the young lady whose death we just heard confirmed as a homicide within the last few minutes. And they also talked to Brian Laundrie. Take a listen to what happened, part of the conversation the cop had with the young lady, Gabby Petito.
What's going on? How come you're crying?
I'm sorry. We've just been fighting this morning. Some personal issues.
It was a long day. We were camping yesterday, and camping got flies and stuff. I'm sorry I hit the bump there.
I was distracting him from driving. I'm sorry.
Can I get you to step out of the vehicle for me, man?
Yeah.
Just hang tight right there.
Okay, and then they talked to him as well, Brian Laundrie. Take a listen to that exchange.
So, tell me, what's going on?
But she just gets worked up sometimes, and I try and really distance myself from her, so like I lock the car and I walk away from her. What happened this morning is that she's trying to start up like her own little website blog and everything, so I give her time. We really had a nice morning, if anything, but she just got worked up because we were trying to get going and get her day going because we want to go, like, arches before the summer time.
Okay. You want to tell me about those scratches on your face?
She had a cell phone in her hand. That's why I was pushing her away.
That's why he's pushing her away. He had scratches on his face. He had scratches on his arm. He explained it away. She explained it away. And the police did not decide to arrest either one of them. Now, I'm not going to condemn the cops for that. I told you before, I've gone on lots and lots of ride-alongs with the cops. And dealing with domestics, they've got a tough job. They've got to figure out who got injured in this case, who did the injury, what was the intent of the person, was this just a typical fight between, you know, a couple, a man and a woman, or was this something that actually justified a criminal charge? They did not take them into custody, and I don't think that was inappropriate given the circumstances. But today, Gabby Petito has been confirmed to be a victim of homicide. Her boyfriend, Brian Laundrie, who went all the way back to Florida driving her vehicle, offering no call for help. He didn't say, well, she's fallen somewhere or she's hurt somewhere or she's disappeared somewhere. He just drove back to Florida, stayed at his parents' house, refused to talk to the cops. His parents refused to talk to the cops. And then sometime last week, about Tuesday, he disappeared into a big wildlife preserve in Florida. He was spotted apparently on a game camera out in that area, and the police don't know where he is at this point. To your calls now. Let's start with Craig in Bellingham. Hey, Craig, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thanks, Lars.
You bet. What's on your mind?
I was hearing talk to the gal about the religious exemption, and I just wanted to share what we're experiencing here with I work for a city. And we have initially met resistance. There weren't going to be religious exemptions necessarily accepted. But what they have done is they have accepted them. And the turnaround is that they don't have a reasonable accommodation, that it's going to be too significant of a undue hardship on the city or on the agency or on the department.
Good luck with that. I mean, so because Craig, you know the law. The law says that if next week I got in a car wreck and I was confined to a wheelchair, and they say, I'm going to be either temporarily or permanently confined to a wheelchair, I go to my boss and I say, boss, the law says you have to make a reasonable accommodation. And the boss says, nah, it's too inconvenient. We're not going to do it. I would push back against that. And I would say, hold on. This is not unreasonable. You've been accommodating doctors and nurses and everybody else for the last year and a half. You've been accommodating them since vaccines became available in December of last year, and you had all these people working on the job, putting in a lot of hours, and now all of a sudden you can't accommodate those employees anymore? Why?
Well, I think, unfortunately, most of these people aren't going to have the resources or the courage.
But that's where state agencies come in, because Craig, in the state of Washington, there's an agency called Labor and Industries. And if you think you're getting screwed by your boss, you call up Labor and Industries and say, hey, I ask for a reasonable accommodation. In Oregon, it's called Bureau of Labor and Industries, very similar name. And you can call on something as pedestrian as, my boss fired me, but he didn't give me my last paycheck, or didn't pay me for all the hours that I've worked. And if you call, they will go to bat for you. And this organization, First Liberty, will go to bat for you as well.
Well, that's good to hear, because I think when you're saying it to that gal, it sounds really easy. And
oh, I'm not saying it's easy. It's going to take an effort. You're going to have to say to the boss, I want a religious exemption. Oh, you're going to deny it? Then I'm going to call Labor and Industries, and we'll see what they have to say. And I know they're part of the same state government as Jay Inslee, but I would suggest that at least you fight for your freedoms. And if you aren't willing to fight for your freedoms legally and lawfully, then maybe you don't deserve them at all. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get right into Representative Tom Emmer, a member of Congress from Minnesota. Although why a smart young guy from Indiana would end up going to the heart of darkness, to a place that's full of liberals. But, you know, somebody has to minister to these people, right, Congressman?
Well, just keep in mind, I was born to a childhood sweetheart that got married before my dad's senior year at the University of Notre Dame. That's the only reason I spent 3 months of my childhood in South Bend, Indiana, Lars.
Just till dad got out of school, right? That was, and that's a good reason, Amen. But I like South yeah. Bend, I wasn't impressed with Mayor Buttigieg and his transportation policies, but whatever. Let's talk about what's going on right now with America's southern border, because I know you've got some strong feelings about what Joe Biden's non-existent border security is doing to all of America. And I'll keep an eye on the clock because I understand you have a vote coming up and we don't want you to miss that.
No, they did. They just called it when I was calling in. Look, the Biden administration has created this border crisis, and they refuse to fix it. We didn't have this problem before January of this year, Lars. The Trump administration had done a fabulous job in getting this under control. This new administration, the Biden administration, his incompetence is astounding. Democrats' immigration policies like catch and release fuel illegal immigration, Lars, because migrants know that instead of being sent home, they're going to be processed and then released into the United States. More than 1.4 million migrants know, or I should say that we know of, have crossed the U.S.-Mexico border illegally since Biden took office. And interesting, the thousands of Haitians currently living under the Del Rio International Bridge is more evidence of the Biden administration's incompetence and their inability or refusal, you pick whichever one makes more sense to you, Lars, to get our border under control. By the way, most of the family units there are being processed and then released into the United States. Border security is a national security issue. Cartels can go back and forth as they please. Terrorists know they can get through, and drug smuggling is increasing. This is a crisis of, it's one of a series of incompetent acts or failure to act on behalf of the Biden administration. But this one's only going to get worse.
I'm talking to Congressman Tom Emmer, who's the congressman from Minnesota's 6th Congressional District. But let me ask you about something. You've used the term incompetent several times. How much of this is incompetence, and how much of it is absolutely positively deliberate? Because Joe Biden and Kamala Harris see a future for the Democrat Party in millions and millions of illegal aliens that they would like the Congress to give green cards to.
I think it's both. I think it's both. And Lars, you know, whether it's the border, whether it's inflation that we haven't seen at highs for more than 30 years, whether it's the crime wave that has gone across this country based on what has now become the party of defund the police, the Socialist Democrats of America, every step of the way you could argue it's incompetence. Some of this is intentional because they believe when he was sworn in as president that they have a mandate to undo some of the most popular policies under the Trump administration, right? Whether it was energy, whether it was the border, et cetera, it's intentional that they want to undo what President Trump had been so successful with. But I'm going to tell you, the results have just screamed incompetence.
Congressman, when you get that final bell, tell me and I'll let you go. But tell me this, you're a guy with 7 kids. You've got to care about the kind of America that's going to be created by a wide open border, by these kinds of things, whether deliberate or examples of incompetence. Do you think that's getting across to Americans that this is drug trafficking, it's human trafficking, and it's absolute gutting of the country's immigration laws?
I do. I do. I think when you look at polling across our battleground districts, you know, every town, whether it's a border town or not, is affected by illegal immigration. You pointed out it's the drugs that pour across the border. Again, the cartels, they come across. Some would argue right now, Lars, that they're in control of the border. This debacle in Afghanistan that did not need to happen, the complete mismanagement of that withdrawal, is going to fuel more terrorist cells that potentially could end up on our southern border and find their way into the United States. This is not just a border issue. And by the way, you've said it, I know, Lars, a country without a border is not a country. So
no.
I think Americans are smart. Americans, believe it or not, know what these people are not doing, and they're going to hold them accountable in the next election, assuming they can't cause damage that we can't repair.
Congressman, I don't want you to miss that vote. I so appreciate your time and what you do for the people of Minnesota.
Hey, thank you, Lars. I appreciate your voice out there.
Thanks very much. That's Representative Tom Emmer from Minnesota. He represents the 6th Congressional District. Let's see what Jim has to say about illegal aliens. Jim, do you think that Joe Biden is being incompetent in his handling of the border, or do you think he's actually doing this deliberately to deliberately damage this country?
Well, I think he's deliberately doing it to damage this country. We right now here in Pendleton, we have a busload of them up here at the Social Security office. And it appears to me that they're handing them money out so that they can go to the store and buy food. I don't know if they're going to be staying here or if they're moving on down the road, but we need a new president. We need a new governor. I've called, and I'd like, this state is a sanctuary state, and I would like to see if we can become an unsanctuary county. And I'll bet you we could probably get at least a good 30 more to follow us.
I think you probably could, Jim, because that's one of the issues, is that people should understand the game that's being played right now. And I appreciate your call. You let 200,000 illegals per month, which has been the number going all the way back. I think May was 170,000. June was 200,000 plus. July was 200,000 plus. We now know that August was 200,000 plus. I have no doubt that September will be 200,000 plus. By the time we get to the end of the year, and they have allowed 2 million people to come into this country illegally. And you say, but they're told to go to court, that they're going to have to explain their illegal presence in this country. No, they're not. They're going to disappear into the big sanctuary states and sanctuary cities of America, where the local politicians, at least in the blue states, have decreed that the police cannot take any action. You can't hold somebody who's illegally in America, even though, and let me point this out to you, a disproportionate number of people who come into this country illegally, no big surprise, commit other crimes. And I know I've heard, and I want to warn you about something that you're going to hear a lot. You're going to hear why, Lars, immigrants to America are more law-abiding by percentages than citizens are. Well, there's a game they're playing, and it's a word game. If you say immigrant, when you say immigrant to me, I say an immigrant is somebody who comes into America legally. If you come in legally and they give you a green card and they say, mind your P's and Q's, keep your nose clean, and if you are a good law-abiding green card holder for 5 years, you can then study for the test, take the oath, and become an American citizen. Those people are very law-abiding, and the reason is, if you're not law-abiding, if you go out and commit crimes, you can have your green card taken away and you can be shipped back to the country you came from. On the other hand, if you're an illegal alien and you entered the country illegally and you identified yourself illegally and you worked illegally and you didn't pay taxes illegally, if you did all those illegal things, it's like the example, I like metaphors, so I've always thought, what's the best metaphor for that? If somebody's about to rob a liquor store and they drive their getaway car up in front, you know, so they can run in, rob the liquor store, and come back out. Do you think they worry about whether or not they've parked their car legally? Of course not. They're committing a far bigger crime. Do you think that people who come into this country illegally and don't obey any of our laws will make good citizens in a country that is a nation of laws and not a nation of men? I don't think so. Back in just a moment, you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And this segment of the show is brought to you by Marquee Hot Tubs. They'll give you the ultimate hot tub and swim spa experience. Visit online at Marquee Hot Tubs or visit one of their three locations. That's Marquee, M-A-R-Q-U-I-S, MarqueeHotTubs.com. Let me go to your calls because I'm curious what people have to say. We've got a lot of calls about religious exemptions, and let me tell you something. I always warn you, I'm not a lawyer, but I get the lawyers on the show. And the lawyers who've come on the show from groups like First Liberty, which is a nonprofit organization funded by a bunch of generous folks. I don't have any financial ties to them at all. But they put together a toolkit, and they said what you need to do is say to your boss, if your boss says you have to get the jab or no job, you say, boss, I'd like a religious exemption. Now, I've had a lot of people saying, well, they tell me that their religious exemption is unpaid leave of absence, or in some cases they've just said, well, you've been given a religious exemption, but we're not going to schedule you for any shifts and you aren't going to be getting a paycheck. As far as I'm concerned, again, non-lawyer Lars, that is constructively firing you. So if their accommodation of your religious exemption is to fire you, and I call it being fired if they say, well, you won't be working and you won't be getting a check. If anybody other than a lawyer can tell me what the constructive difference is between getting fired or being told you won't be working here and you won't be getting a check, I'd love to hear that explanation. Then you look through firstliberty.org, and they give a layperson's example, and explanation. I read this a couple of weeks ago when we first started recommending it, saying there are sample letters in there for how to ask for a religious exemption. And when the boss says, we're going to basically fire you, only we're not going to call it firing, here's my suggestion to you. Call the Bureau of Labor and Industries in Oregon. Call Labor and Industries in Washington State and say, I believe my employer is violating my civil rights under federal and state law. And when they say, well, how specifically? I've been fired because I asked for a religious exemption. When you say, well, who's going to go to bat for me? Make those state agencies that all of us pay for anyway, make them step up to the plate. Now, if Labor and Industries says, we are going to go along with Jay Inslee, or Boley says, we are going to go along with Kate Brown for political reasons, and we're not going to defend your civil rights, I think that that agency has a problem. Let's go to Mark. Mark, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, you just kind of nailed it right there, Lars. We were told today, we were told today that we are supposed to health screen every day, and none of us have a problem with that. We just don't like the way they're doing it.
Yep.
The thing that points infrared at your forehead and takes your picture, we haven't been doing it. And then just recently, within the first couple of days, they've come down pretty hard on a lot of us. And their definition of religious, exemption is taking a leave of absence. That's what they said. That was, okay, well, accommodate your religious exemption, you take a leave of absence. And I go, well, what you're essentially doing is suspending us. And they said, no. Well,
you're being fired. Aren't you really being fired, Mark? Because if you're told you're going to take a leave of absence, you won't be doing any work here, and you won't be getting a paycheck, tell me the meaningful difference between no work and no paycheck and being fired. What's the difference?
We tried to get them this is our managers, okay? And they don't know everything, but we asked them that same question. What is the difference? And they don't. She's going to call human resources, and we're going
to
get them.
You know what? Here's my question to you, Mark. Do you believe you have freedoms in the United States?
Of course.
Do you believe they're defended or protected by the Constitution and defended under state and federal law?
Okay, Lars.
I'm just saying,
the party in charge doesn't.
No, but hold on. Who is in charge for how employers, and I'm an employer, but who's in charge when it comes to how employers are allowed to employ people? Can you employ slaves in America?
No.
Okay, why not? Well, Mexican drug cartels are allowed to employ slaves by Kate Brown on their marijuana plantations in Southern Oregon. But other than that, you're not allowed to have slaves. Why? Because it's against the law and it violates people's rights. So my next question to you is the important one. Are you willing to fight for your freedoms?
Of course.
Okay, will you pick up the phone?
I need some guidance too, Lars.
I'm trying. Firstliberty.org, then what I want you to do, and I would love to have somebody tell me, no, Boley isn't going to do it. If you call the Bureau of Labor and Industries, it's known as Boley, it's a state agency, they're the kind of people who go to bat. Say I fired somebody. I had to fire somebody a few years ago. I wrote him his final paycheck on the day I let him go. Okay, I had to do it. But I wrote him his final paycheck. You know why? Because if I don't write him his final paycheck on the day I terminate him or within 24 hours, I've got problems. And all you got to do is call Boley. If you call Boley up and say, I believe my civil rights have been violated by my employer and I want you to take action. Now, as I said, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a state bureaucrat. Thank God. But if they come back and say, we are not going to defend people's civil liberties, then my next call would be to the U.S. attorney, because every U.S. attorney's office, that's Joe Biden's DOJ. I know it's Joe Biden's DOJ, but if you call them up, every U.S. attorney's office and the DOJ have what they call the Civil Rights Division. And the Civil Rights Division, sometimes they go off on crazy tangents, but their job is to defend civil rights. So if you said, I've been fired because I'm in a wheelchair, or I've been fired because I lost my ability to speak or see or hear, I have a disability, the DOJ is supposed to go to bat for you too. Make those two phone calls. And if that doesn't work, I don't really have an explanation other than First Liberty again and going to court.